podcast is just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind. I swear these other podcasts are just a waste of time. I'm skipping through them, I'd rather listen and change my mind. Wes and Nick always help me through my daily grind. Your favorite guys, your favorite lines, change my mind.
Yeah.
And welcome back to another edition of the Change My Mind podcast.
I won't change my mind because I don't have to, because I'm an American.
Yes, you are. I'm Wesley Sykes, and through the other side of the ether is the Tuckload, my low whack. I think I got that right. It's Mr. Nicholas J. Esquire, Choctaw lacrosse star for hire.
I'm just glad I'm not biscuits. as long as neither of us are biscuits, we're in good shape.
Poor biscuits, man. You know, yep. Poor biscuits there. But this week, we're going to be discussing the 12th season of MCU Disney Plus television, Echo, here, starring Alacqua Cox. And who else is in there? Who else am I forgetting? Let's say Vincent D'Onofrio. But for that, Nick, it's MLK Day as we record, as a crow flies here. So I think it's only fitting that you tell me about the last dream that you had that you can remember.
Yeah, it's okay. So I definitely dream more now than years ago. You and I were talking about this beforehand. But I can't think of like a recent one. Like, I know I've had some recently that I remember, but I'll tell you what, the most recent one I can recall vividly was a nightmare. We were staying at a hotel in Buffalo, and I had this like vision of like this terrifying like woman that was in our room. And I still don't know if I was asleep or not for that moment. It was.
Do you get like sleep paralysis or anything? I've heard a lot of people say that. They're like, I get sleep paralysis, and I don't even know what that's like.
I don't know if we've talked about this beforehand, but yes, I've gotten it twice in my life, and it is awful. It is. I thought it was like this interesting thing to experience when I first heard about it, and so I kind of tried to deliberately have it happen, because you can, and it didn't. It wasn't great. That was actually, you want to talk about one of the more like vivid, awful experiences of like,
so you're awake through that.
Yeah. So basically my eyes opened up before. I think what it is your eyes, maybe your brain like opens up before the rest of your body actually is awake. So I had it was a hallucination. There's no other way to put it.
Did you see like a Slender Man or something like that? Or the Hat Man? I think the Hat Man's the popular one.
I was at my parents' house. This was a while back. I was at my parents' house, and it was a shape, like a shadow, but like a shadow I could make out in the dark of night. And it was the figure looked like my father. Like, and it went,
man.
I'm not kidding you. It went like that. Like I've never had like a concern about like my parents' house being haunted or anything like that, but like that's why I like had to be a hallucination, not a spirit. So, but it was terrifying.
I think for sanity's sake, you got to say that, right?
Yeah. So for sanity's sake, it's a hallucination. Yes. Exactly. You know, that was terrifying. So those are two things that I like.
Well,
very
maybe
much
I. Remember. Maybe I shouldn't say this because just like you said, you know, it seems like a cool experience to. You know, kind of have under your belt, because I never had anything like that. So maybe I shouldn't kind of like welcome those type of things into my life. But
nope, I wouldn't recommend it.
It sounds kind of cool. I don't know.
It's a bizarre experience. I mean, I remember it very vividly. I also remember the second time, but I was trying to shake myself out of it. And again, I'm like basically like a fish out of water while I'm doing it. So, but I was like, nope. Like the second time I realized, I'm like, nope, we're like, get out of this. And I tried and I shook myself out of it, but it's not fun at all. Like it's bizarre.
If you sleep on your arm, you know, if you fall asleep the wrong way and you're like, your whole shoulder is asleep. Is that kind of like what your whole body feels like?
Have you ever had it where you slept on your arm to the point where if you have to hold it up, otherwise it's just going to drop on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. I don't think to that extent, but I can feel that. Yeah.
That's what I get for pitching as long as I did, but I get that sometimes. it's like that. Like I would have times where like my right arm falls asleep. And then if I don't like hold it up, it'll just drop on me. It's along those lines. It's bizarre.
Cause I don't dream.
Okay.
I don't dream. Hear that. Well, sometimes I do, but you know, it's tough. It's like, you wake up and like, you try to recall things. And then like by 9 AM, by your first, like, you know, sip of coffee or whatever, it's all kind of gone from your head.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I do understand that. That's probably what happens to me more often than not.
Yeah. So it's cool. I would like to dream a little bit more, you know? I remember as a kid, I used to have a cork board with all these stickers on it, and it was right by my bed. I used to call it the dream machine. I used to pretend to hit the buttons to get a good dream.
You know, I just remembered, I used to have a reoccurring nightmare for a little bit too. And it was like a inspired by a Goosebumps cover. I only remember the negative ones.
It was spooky.
Yeah. I only remember the negative ones. It probably says a lot about me.
That's true. I think that's kind of general though, you know?
Probably. I appreciate that. You make me feel better. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, that's like everything. You know, it's like what they used to say in the restaurant industry. You know, you get 9 out of 10 reviews that are great, and that one review travels so much more than nine out of 10 good reviews. You know?
For sure. Speaking of reviews, I feel like we're going to land similarly today.
Yes. Yeah. And whether that's good or bad remains to be seen, Nick, but we're never remaining to be seen. That's not the great segue there, but it's Nick's Comic Book Minute.
A superb choice.
So yeah, a couple of big issues coming out this week, both from creators that we recently had on TLDR. From DC, we got the return of John Constantine Hellblazer. This 8-issue story is called Dead in America. First issue drops this week. This is from Cy Spurrier and Aaron Campbell, and we just had Cy Spurrier on the show. I think it was right before, maybe even right before Christmas. But had a great chat with him. He'd done Constantine stuff back in, I think in 2021, his run ended, and the pandemic, unfortunately, kind of had impact on a lot of different books, and that was definitely one of them. But it looks like since then it's done well in collected edition, so they're bringing that back. But I've already read the first issue. Outstanding. Go check out that conversation with Cy. And on top of that, too, from Image Comics, we got the 5th issue of Kill Your Darling. This is the start of the second half of this 8-issue story. Those guys just rejoined the show. That audio dropped on Monday. So plenty of stuff to listen to after you listen and Change My Mind. This week on TLDR, you will be getting a What's New stream, which may mean that even more is in the hopper on the way, but that's where we're at right now.
I've seen a lot of people on the X-verse talking about a new Spider-Man comic and being pretty excited about that. Have you guys gotten to that yet, or is that in the hopper?
Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of hype around this for a while. And I don't know if I've explained this to you before, but Joe and I sometimes call dibs because, you know, on the mainline episode, right? So Joe called dibs on this. He's definitely more of the Spidey guy, but he said he absolutely loved it. And everybody I've seen talk about it has been absolutely gushing over the first issue. So, you know, it's a funny timing. And over the past month or so, there's been a lot of talks about, like, just, you know, oh, superhero comics are not good enough and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't think all of them are perfect there. And there are some bad ones too, objectively. But there's plenty of good stuff. It's great to have this, like, bringing people back in, because everybody seems united on this front about Ultimate Spider-Man.
Spider-Man seems to be the great unifier. You know, it brings Sony and Disney together, you know, it brings everybody together. It saves the MCU. It saves the comic book industry. What can't Peter Parker do?
He probably can't save Morbius. Maybe Morbius, but not Morbius. True. Or what do we got? Madam Web.
Madam Web with her Ocean Spray commercial suit that's getting released there.
How is that the reveal of the suit? That is insane.
Yeah, and then she has some like ASMR, like kind of sexual, like advice demand. I don't know. It was kind of like a dominatrix. I got like a 50 Shades of Grey type of vibe from her, where when she was like previewing the movie. Have you seen this?
I did. Was she actually the one in 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe she's taking the reins this time, you know?
Yeah, there you go. BDSM pun there by the taking the reins?
Yes, it was.
Intentional or not?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Oh, bravo, sure.
Sometimes I can, you know, sometimes I just kind of run into them, but this one was planned out there.
Tip of the cap.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, good sir. Okay, so that's it. Are you ready to get on to our main topic?
I am, yes. Let's get into this.
Hello, Tommy. Are you ready to get into our main topic?
All right, now let's go get him.
All right, let's do it. Nice to bring back the flute every now and again. This is the Echo Exit Survey. Nick, what is this 5-episode series about?
Maya Lopez must face her past, reconnect with her Native American roots, and embrace the meaning of family and community if she ever hopes to move forward.
Okay, so this was directed by Sidney Friedland and created by David Mack and Joe Quesada. This is starring Alacqua Cox as Maya Lopez, Chasky Spencer as Henry Black Crow Lopez, Devery Jacobs as Bonnie, Cody Lightning, I like that, as our guy Biscuits here. Graham Greene, another big MVP that we'll talk about later, as Scully. Tantu Cardinal as Chula. Morningstar Angeline as Lowak. Morningstar is another great name, yeah, too. Danny McCallum as Tucklow. Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk. Thomas Sullivan as Vicky Tyson. And Andrew Howard as Zane.
Yeah, I got some thoughts on Zane. We'll get to that later. As for the how this did with the critics, this is a 6.3 out of 10 mm-hmm. on IMDb. And then it's a 72-68 split on Rotten Tomatoes. Looking at the episode breakdown from IMDb, the highest ranking one was the first episode, 7.4 out of 10, Chaffa. Then we got 6.8 out of 10, 7.2, 7.0. And then the finale got the lowest rating, Maya, at 6.2.
I'm just going to pull up our MCU rankings here. Do you want to start with your tweet length review?
Yeah, I thought about this quite a bit because this was a tough one because it was – there's a lot of good here, but there's also a lot of, I think execution is really the, where this failed in a lot of ways, not conceptually. So I gave this a 78 out of course, our scale is out of 100. Great action, some great action, two action sequences that were top notch. And again, some good concepts. Unfortunately, I can't say it's more than solid because the writing is really what lacked in certain spots. And I wouldn't, and I will get into that more later on because that's my biggest hangup, and unfortunately, that can really make or break a show because it's just such a huge part of everything.
Absolutely. Thank you there for putting that nice. It wasn't exactly a tweet length review, but you helped me out there. That's good partnership there. But we are neighbors. It's good to be that we're partners because I give this a 77 out of 100. So we're real close here. Some great ideas, but a miss in the execution. It's just kind of a show. There's kind of a mishmash. There's some good standout moments, but you get the same problem at the end with every Marvel Disney show. That's kind of clunky. They fall into another trope that they've been doing recently where they get this kind of nebulous type of powers where you don't really know what it is or what it does, but it's just light coming out of the body. You know, that's getting a little bit tiresome. So, but they did some good, there were some good ideas, but I agree with it. The execution just wasn't totally there.
Yep.
So with a 77 and a 78, that's a 77 and a half on our CMM aggregate scores here. Let's see.
That's it at 39.
Yeah, oh yeah, I see there. Right. Yep. So 39, just ahead of Captain Marvel and just behind Marvel's What If. This is missing What If season 2 on there, but
it is.
So this would be the 45th piece of content that we've gotten from Marvel, whether it's a TV show, movie, and apparently all the Netflix stuff is canon now. So I don't know. Maybe we have to do an MCU rewatch of the Netflix series.
I'd be totally down for that. It'd be a full, first full watch. So actually, technically though, if we're missing season 2 of What If on here, then I know that's higher than both.
Yeah,
both.
Yeah. So it'll be 39.
Yeah, no, 40. It'll be 40. Yep, this will be 40. Yep. Which I mean, that makes sense. Again, like this has potential, but it's just there's a lot of ways in which it didn't execute. Moving on to the exit survey questions.
Yes.
While you, I don't know if you need to pencil that in or everything.
No, we'll do that after the fact, or we won't waste the people's time like that. What is your takeaway from Marvel releasing this in a one dump drop? So they've been, you know, we talked about this last week with What If season 2, just kind of changing up some of the release formats here. This one was, you know, kind of had a little bit of attention to it with the one drop all at once there.
Yeah, I do think it was a smart move on their part. Just like I think with the the daily drops with What If that you were just talking about. I think that was also a smart move for a few different reasons with that show, but specifically with this one, it's just, but it's, you know, there's it's solid. I think it makes it a little bit better because you're not waiting week to week. And some of the endings of the episodes aren't like, oh, it's a crazy cliffhanger. Like, what's going to like? So it was smart on their part. But I will say, now that we've gotten this back to back, I can't help but wonder if this is like an indicator, like now going forward, anytime we see something that's not weekly, I'm probably going to be thinking, okay, why are they not doing it weekly? There's got to be a reason for that and their opinion on like their stance on how the final product came out.
Right. Like maybe they don't feel as strongly about that. At least that was my big takeaway. I agree. I think it's a smart move, but it screams to me that they want to hide the clunkiness of the show where they're so content on trying to win the week. Every show is trying to do that, right? Across social media and just through the internet conversation and discussion around everything. They want to be able to stretch that out, that word of mouth, as far as they can go. Yeah. This feels like they just kind of wanted to dump everything, get it over with, move on, forget it ever happened, and then wait until Deadpool comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty well.
All right, good positive start here. What was your favorite episode?
Okay, so this is, for me, episode 3, and the number one reason for that, this is where we get the action sequence at the, the roller rink, yes, which I thought was a great touch. I thought it was very, very well done, too. There are a lot of times for me where I feel like, especially on these shows, we get these action sequences with grounded characters, and sometimes they're good. I feel like it doesn't happen as much with Marvel as it may, when we look at like a Netflix show that tries to go with action and it's more grounded and whatnot. But anyways, I feel like we see this a fair amount where we can run into action sequences that are supposed to be very intricate and have a lot going on, but they're the way in which they move isn't fluid, I guess, is the best way to put it. And I understand there are times where shit's got to get clunky when you're dealing with certain fighters, like David Harbour's Red Guardian. Like, that's a guy who's powerful, but he's like past his prime, should be clunky. Totally get it. But here, that fight was so flawless. I really like everything about it. I just thought it was like, this looks like a comic book fight. And I really enjoyed that from start to finish. And I thought the other one was good too in the first episode, but I thought this was a little bit better just because it was more like the setting was more fun.
Yeah, no, and I hear it. And I liked that brawling fight style a little bit more that we had here. I thought Echo or Maya Lopez was a little bit more of a brawler, not really like a finesse fighter, kind of like Black Widow, maybe, in that kind of mold. So she's like a little bit more willing to get a fight in a phone booth sort of thing. So I liked that. I think this was episode 2 that stands out, but that's the train heist that they go on. Right. And
yeah.
So I thought that really was cool. Kind of cool.
Yes.
Although the storyline, I'm still kind of confused. This is like, it's a lower level local Oklahoma, I guess, gang, for lack of a better term, that knows that there's a hit out for Maya, so they call up the bigger gang to let them know, and that's kind of what happens, right?
Well, I mean, see, this is where again they tried to do two things, and they both seemed interesting, but I felt like they didn't commit well enough either way. I when we heard from what is her uncle's name, Henry?
Oh, the Black Crow. Yeah,
Black Crow. Yeah. So he said to her at one point, like, I tried to leave and Fisk told me I couldn't leave. So this was just an extension of all of Fisk's operation. And then on top of that, like, what's that dickhead's name? Vicky. Yeah, he's still part of the same group. He just called up the chain.
Gotcha. Okay, so I was a little bit confused with that. I'm not crazy about Kingpin being out of New York. That feels a little out of place for me. I don't know if that's just me not really like having too much experience with the character.
I will say that when we first saw him at the end of episode 3, right? Where I will say, I was like, you look like a fish out of water.
Yeah. So I don't know. It feels like they were kind of torn, because I think there's a really interesting show with her going rogue in New York City and then maybe going home and then coming back to kind of, tie up any loose ends with Fisk. I think that's kind of interesting. Or, maybe you don't have Fisk at all and you just have this show about Maya returning home. You have, you know, episode one, which is essentially just a previously on from the Hawkeye series, you know, mm-hmm. really gets everybody up to speed, which, you know, that could be received differently. I know some people are getting maybe sick of all the quote unquote required reading that it takes for all mm-hmm. these Marvel shows and everything. But it's also continuity factor too. So you don't have to go back and watch all this stuff, right? You kind of get up to speed and just not have to do any of that required reading. So, you know, you may fall on one side of the fence there, but you know, for us who had already seen the series, I thought that was just kind of a filler episode for the most part.
Yeah, I think it was like, it's funny that it was the highest rated one on IMDb.
Yeah. Well, that's the Daredevil effect though, too, right? That's the Daredevil fight.
I guess so. So I think most of these episodes were like 40 minutes. I think the last one was only 36 or something. But they were
shorter. As it goes on. Yeah.
But they were in the general 40 minute ish mm-hmm. range. But like I felt, that first one was like, okay, this is mostly a recap and then kind of a table setter. So it's like it's fine. It gets the job done. And also, it's been a while since we saw Hawkeye, so it's not necessarily the worst thing. But yeah, it was like I am kind of surprised it was the. Again, I know it's Daredevil, but that's why it's the highest rated.
Yeah, and we could talk about Daredevil maybe a little bit later on in this survey here. But the other reason why I liked episode two, you know, again, the interesting concept of opening, you know, the majority of every episode with one of Maya's ancestors kind of going back there. So you're going back to like, I don't know if it was, I forget what the date was, but you're going back to like 1300 Alabama, you know, and they're playing that stick ball lacrosse, whatever you want to call it there. And I thought that was a really cool opening. Would have liked that to be a little bit more violent. I don't know much about Native American history, but I recall those like athletic events to be a little bit more brutal.
Well, didn't they say, yeah, they said that, whoever lost was going to get banished, I think. Mm. So yeah, it would have definitely. And then when you bring in that, like the ringer kind of,
well, that's what I mean. Yeah, you get the John Cena guy there. You get the Drax looking dude, right? So I was expecting him to be a little bit more violent, a little bit more brutal there.
Yeah, they
but it was a cool scene though. I did like that.
Yeah, it was good. It was a good addition to the story. But I hear you. Like they could have, especially with the way the show was. Like they had like when Vicky dies. That's pretty violent, especially for like that the character of Bonnie, who's like,
absolutely.
I know she's an EMT, but it's still like you're, I don't know. I feel like that's not, I don't know, EMTs too often.
Yeah. And right. He just kind of like falls over, right. And his head is like on the other side. Yeah.
Down his face. Yeah. That was well done. I mean, again, like there's some, like we agree, like there's some really good moments in the show, but there's stuff that lacks.
It's all kind of disjointed, and it feels and what I had heard, I was listening to some reviews. I think this might have been on New Rockstars, but they were saying that the two creators, Sidney Friedland and I forget the other one, maybe it was the David Mack, when they were kind of going back and forth about, I guess they had differing ideas on how they wanted to approach the show. So they kind of were kind of shoehorning their ideas into kind of make one cohesive idea. And then obviously with the reshoots, I think this was supposed to be a 6-episode series. And then, I don't think they intended to have the Hawkeye previously on stuff in episode one as much. I think that kind of came back as maybe a note from Kevin Feige or production, like, hey, we got to do something here. So it feels kind of like it was like maybe a hatchet job is too strong of a term, but like everything was just kind of like pieced together that didn't really fit.
Yeah, I mean... I agree with you by and large, because this is kind of where we're kind of starting to dip into what will age the worst, because I'm going to say similar things to you, but from a different lens. So I don't know if we want to jump there or hang for just a sec on that.
No, we'll hang back on that, because what I will say about episode three that I liked, again, that same opening where you have that black and white Western with what's her name there?
Her ancestor.
Tucklow. Okay. Yeah, because all the episodes are named after her ancestors.
Little
note there. So Tuckler, and she wants to be one of like the light horsemen, and then she's got so it's cool. It's got like that black and white. It looks like it's on like a real projection screen that you're kind of got a role to play.
How did I notice that? Jesus.
So yeah, I thought that was another cool moment there too.
Yeah.
Before we get to what age the best and the worst though, this is going to be more of a solo question for you. How did Kingpin stack up to his Netflix Daredevil role?
So I hear you on the note of like him being in Oklahoma seems odd. Like as you were kind of saying that note before, it was like, oh, you know, it would be interesting. You probably could, it would have been better suited if you had like a, not Bullseye, because obviously we just saw him in the Marvel Netflix show. You don't want to bring too much over right away. But somebody like that would have been interesting to maybe see in the mix. As much as what you're doing with Kingpin is, like, he's very pivotal to the story in a lot of, in multiple ways. So I hear that, like, him in Oklahoma does seem odd, but I feel like they also kind of kept him out of like the rural part and more in-house a lot of times.
I didn't
really think of that note, but more importantly, the actual question of how did he stack up, I felt like it's the same guy the whole time. Like, this is exactly what we got in the Marvel Netflix show. Nothing has changed with him. The only difference is now, instead of him obsessing over his wife Vanessa, now he's got it with Maya. I will say maybe he was a little, he gave her a little more of a leash, a little more patience. But
I would say, I mean, she shot her in the eye, him in the eye.
Yeah. Cause like, he was amazing with Vanessa, but like, I don't, that may be the only thing is like, he maybe gave her a little extra leash, but even still, like if Kingpin loves you, like, forget it. You really can't do anything wrong and he will forgive you. But like, you gotta be a special individual to get there. So short answer to the question, he stacked up perfectly. I'm very excited going forward for Kingpin.
Yeah, I'm surprised at how forgiving it was, that he, so much so that he was willing to have her kill him, right, with the hammer, one, but also give her everything. And he's like kind of begging for it. It seemed like it was like a little, I don't know. This is kind of like the King of the Conqueror type question for me here. It's like, if you have him losing to Loki and Sylvie and, you know, Ant-Man and everything, is he really the big bad? And if this is supposed to be the street level Thanos, who's like kind of kowtowing to this new character, you know, it feels like the dynamic is a little off.
So you remember how, Jonathan, how the He Who Remains said to Loki at season two, how like it's like he knows all this happens, and like he had that moment aside with Loki. So I know in the end Loki still ended up winning, but he did what people didn't expect and blah blah blah. Kingpin's like that. He's the same kind of way where it's like chess, checkers. Like he will sacrifice battles for the better, for the greater good of the war. He came before Thrawn in Star Wars, and I know you don't know who Thrawn is, but for those who don't know, he's very similar where he's an amazing chess player. I was waiting for Maya to take a swing and for him to catch it, or for him to have armor underneath him and just make sure his face doesn't get hit, because he would have been fine otherwise. If she had taken that step, he was not going down. No way. He was just giving her last chance, and really trying to force her hand and be like, see, you don't really hate me that much. Now love me again and we're fine. Or it's basically he's trying to go for an all or nothing move, but he let her think she had the power. So I mean that's good writing, okay. I think, because I know he's not just going down.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fair there. I think that's a good explanation. Again, I know kind of tangentially, is that the term? With Kingpin there. Right? Sure. Just a little bit through the Spider-Man animated series, some stuff with Daredevil, but not hugely familiar with his work. Though I love Vincent D'Onofrio. I love that kind of like nasally, breathy, kind of like voice acting that he does with everything. Like he's, you know, under a lot of pressure with all that weight on his chest.
Yeah. He does a really good job with this character. I'm really excited. Like he didn't miss a beat. He really didn't.
Okay. So what age the best? I think Vincent D'Onofrio's performance goes up there. I think we can say that there, but what else do you got?
I mean, the fights, they are what will age the best going forward. They were both awesome. I don't think I had an issue with either one of them. And I really do look at a lot of these like hand-to-hand combats, like I think Shang-Chi is some of the best stuff that we've gotten
for sure. Yeah.
And I don't know from like, again, like just like a more grounded type of hand-to-hand fight versus like, you know, taking on CGI big bads and different shit like that. This is not on that level, but it was very, very well done. And you're dealing with like a lot clunkier fighters. So I was really happy with both of the highlight fight scenes that we got. They executed those perfectly. So those would be my two, Kingpin and those fights.
All right. I mentioned the Choctaw stickball lacrosse game there. I really enjoyed that. The Daredevil fight and the train heist. I like those as well.
Yep.
Some of the the openings there that kind of go back to Maya's ancestors and everything. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought the origin story was pretty cool, and I think that was pretty spot on. I think, you know, I'm assuming that's Choctaw lore, but Native American lore. They came from clay and mud and out of the caves and then became human. So that's kind of like what that opening of episode, I think it's episode one that does that.
Yep, that's what the series starts on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. But the Daredevil stuff, that I think that's one of the real, one of the real draws of this series coming in. If you didn't really know anything about Echo, it was like, all right, they showed Daredevil in it. Let's see it. It was really, some people, some scoopers have said it was going to be like a 6-minute fight coming into it or a 6-minute scene. And then some people said it was 2 minutes and ended up being like, I don't know, maybe right around a minute. It's a very cool scene. It was kind of shot that like a fake one shot sort of thing. So I thought that was kind of a cool artistic take. Again, I kind of feel like this way with Kingpin to a lesser degree, but Daredevil felt very forced into this story.
Hmm.
He comes in. He's like, I've been watching these guys for a while. And then he just leaves. And there's no mention of this guy ever again. There's just this blind dude with two sticks who's just kicking ass, and it never gets brought up again. I don't know. It just seems like he was in and out.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, that's to me what it felt like. It was just, he was in and out quick. And like, that's that kind of thing can just happen in New York where you got all these heroes fighting around. So like, it felt like, yeah, maybe they're just trying to get him in to add a little bit of hype, but like, I guess from a story standpoint, it didn't like a writing standpoint, it didn't bother me like that to that.
And presumably he should know who Maya is.
Daredevil?
Yeah.
Why? I mean,
because if the Daredevil Netflix show is canon and this girl, like, he's been fighting Kingpin for all this time, and this girl has lived with him and grown up as his niece, and it was really one of his, you know, lead henchmen in New York.
But at that time, she wasn't.
What do you mean?
That fight was her first big fight. Like when Daredevil and her crossed paths, that was her intro fight.
Oh, that's right. Because then they have the dinner and everything afterwards, saying like, you going from the theoretical to the practical or whatever, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yep. I've never seen anybody handle someone like that before. Mm-hmm. Handle him like that before. Excuse me. Handle Daredevil like that.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. But either way, that's another reason too why he's like giving her a million chances. Like, make no mistake about it. Like, she's someone who's taken on Daredevil, where this guy's been a however their story is going to be, like, as we learn more about Daredevil in the MCU, like, he's still the thorn in Kingpin's side. So anybody who can hang with him is going to be a valuable asset. But you know, you brought up the train heist, and that it does age well in the sense of how it was done. But I want to move into what will age the worst from this season, because you talked about it before. The writing, and I know I haven't gotten into detail, but the heist really makes me think of it, because we have this cool backstory that you've been talking about with the start of each episode, where we're meeting Maya's ancestors and these powerful women through the course of time. And then we also have this battle with Kingpin that she's kind of starting. And I felt like you have two interesting ideas that I was like ready to learn more about, or ready to learn more about with Maya's family history background. And we get stuff, but it like, again, you have the powers that it just like, I don't know. It felt like kind of nebulous to me the way they did it. The grandmother addressed it in a capacity, like when she was giving childbirth, and she like these ancestors help you in your moments of need. But it was just, something felt missing there. And then on top of that, the stuff with Kingpin, it just felt like, okay, we're going to have this like crate. She's going to try and take down the, you know, Kingpin's operation systematically. And she did a great job with the train scene. Like, that was brilliant. And I was like, but I know Kingpin comes back in and, hey, he does this thing, and it was interesting, but it was like, it's just the way it stopped and came to a screeching halt. I don't know. It something felt wrong with that too. Something was missing there as well.
Yeah. I hear you on that. And to the writing thing, I think this maybe it's just a me thing. I remember putting this in the group chat, and no one seemed to agree or respond to it for that matter. But at any rate, when they're doing, when the side characters are talking to Maya using the ASL and speaking, because it was kind of changed. Some of them wouldn't speak.
Sure.
Some of them would. Sometimes the perspective would change. So you're not hearing anything. You're kind of viewing everything from Maya's perspective, which I thought was cool. I wish they did a little bit more of that, actually. But when, like, I think of Black Crow, Henry there, when he's talking to Maya, he's signing and he's making sure to sign and he's talking very deliberate there. And maybe that's accurate to how people speak with while also signing. But from a viewing entertainment standpoint, it really draws out the entire conversation and so makes everything kind of drag a little bit.
I'd seen your note, but I hadn't watched it yet. So yeah. I was aware of it going in.
Yeah, you're okay.
And then, well, I appreciate it. But when you said that, and I thought about it as, like, I watch each of these characters, with the first one we see after a period of time who has to interact with Maya is Biscuits. He hasn't seen her since they were kids. So it's like, well, his stuff's going to be rusty. And then I know Henry was in New York, but then left and hadn't been there in a bit. But it's like, okay, he probably hasn't done it in a while, so he's going to be rusty too. Mm-hmm. So to me, whereas, like, the grandparents, they've done it forever because their daughter on top of Maya was also deaf. Mm-hmm. So it's like they've done it forever, so they're going to be a lot more fluid. So it was just very, like, I have no experience with ASL, American Sign Language.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
I have no experience with it. I don't know if you do, but like that felt authentic to me. Like, I had that preparation going into it.
Like I said, it may be authentic. I'm just saying, all right, let's get, I feel like if they almost just didn't, if they just signed and everything was quiet, and if you were just viewing it from Maya's perspective, and then you had the subtitles underneath, I think that might have flowed a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. You know what, actually, too, was that you brought up an interesting note. A really good writing thing that they did was everybody who's her family, they all do sign. And again, like, you talk about the varying ways in which they were good at it.
I know where you're going. Yeah.
The Kingpin bit, when she said it, like, you had a translator and now you did this or whatever. Like, I don't remember exactly her words verbatim, but she's like, because you never could bother to learn how to sign. And I was like, yeah, the one person who's saying I love you, and all these people are showing you. Like, you always say, show, don't tell.
Right. Definitely really manipulative. Although I think that is a pretty cool technology, though. The earpiece, and then with the eye lens, the contact lens there. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, no, definitely with that. I agree. So I got a couple things. So Maya, when she is trapped, there's a couple of things here. One, on the low level gangs and Vicky and his two girls there. When Maya falls down after getting free from being trapped above or tied up above the roller rink, you know, like, maybe you don't tie it to her prosthetic leg. I don't know. Maybe tie it up a little bit higher towards the knees if you can there, because then she's just broke free inevitably, right? That's not going to hold the weight evenly distributed. But then when they tie her up, they leave her prosthetic right next to her, which has the knife boot in it. It's like, all you really have to do is just remove the prosthetic and, like, blindfold her.
Yeah,
but they're clearly not smart, right? They're clearly in over their heads.
They played it up that how dumb they were, but at the same time, like, they were a little too dumb. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. The other one that doesn't really sit well with me is within that same scene, Maya breaks free. She has her sister or her cousin Bonnie there, who she punches in her face. She's really mean to her family. But she then MacGyvers a gun with a laser scope.
Yeah, that's funny.
In minutes. And it's like, she's got like a couple of toothpicks, an elastic band, all this stuff. And suddenly she's like scoping people out with it. With what was it, like a nail gun or something? It wasn't like real bullets.
I actually can't remember. Yeah, as like for all the as much as I enjoyed the fight scene right after, I can't really remember that whole bit.
Yeah, because she kills one of the girlfriends, the bigger girl.
That's right. Yeah, there were a lot of bodies dropping. Yes, this show, actually.
Yes. I also kind of struggle with this. Maybe you can kind of help me talk through this. But Maya is seen by her family as like this galvanizing leader, yet she brings all of this like war and trouble like right to their doorstep. And she's like knocking out her cousin. She's taking advantage of Biscuits. like the relationship between the grandmother and Maya is a little bit weird. Obviously, they have that come to Jesus moment at the episode 5 there. But it's like she's like the grandmother is like, I saw too much of your father in you. That's why I couldn't stand to see you. But she's like, I always loved you. It was just like a weird conflicting of things there.
Yeah, there was a lot going on there. I mean, the whole galvanizing leader thing, they definitely felt that way at the end, but I felt like it was just, you're in dire straits and she's the only one that can like hang with these people. So we kind of have to trust her. So I don't know, that didn't stick out to me as much.
Well, because it's the same thing that the grandmother says to Maya's father after passing away, is that after the mother passes away, it's like, you bring too much trouble to this family, go away, never come back. Mm. And then Maya does the same exact thing. And yeah, she's welcomed.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's her daughter's daughter. So, I mean, I can see that, where it's like she didn't even want her granddaughter to leave originally, right? She wanted just him to leave. I thought it was just,
I don't know. Maybe I don't remember one way or the other. You could be right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know. It was just a little off there for me.
Mm. Yeah. No, I can.
Anything else there? What age the worst?
No. I mean, I feel like a lot of the stuff that we're talking about too gets resolved by some tightening up on some of the writing. Cause it just felt like too, there was just, you know, some of the beats of the show were just like, it was just off. Like the plot wasn't bad. The dialogue wasn't like, didn't stand out like it poorly. Mm-hmm. So it's just,
but yeah, it's like you said, you get that fifth storyline, you get the family storyline, they kind of put them together and you really never get either fleshed out.
Yeah. We don't say it often, but like this show could have benefited from maybe another episode, like a little bit more, maybe,
or Maya, maybe just picking a lane too, you know, like maybe, maybe you don't spend as much time with Fisk. Maybe, you know, I don't know. Or maybe, you know, you downplay the family storyline and it's more of like a solo independent thing between her and Fisk.
Part of me wonders if you add one more episode where it's a little bit more of Maya taking down Fisk and maybe a little bit more of like figuring out the power stuff, and then we can get maybe somehow get more information there. I wonder if you could flesh that out within those two episodes, within one episode, and focus on that, and then kind of just keep everything the way it's going. I feel like it wouldn't throw it off too much, but yeah, I'm not sure.
What do you think about this? Was her powers? From what I understand, her power set was changed. I believe I heard someone else say that Sydney Freeland, I think, is the creator's name. Yeah, Freeland. Yep. That she wasn't a fan of her powers that were in the comic books, which was an echo because she couldn't hear anything, but her eyesight made her so, she had such good eyesight that she could mimic anything, that any move that she saw, kind of like Taskmaster. So that was like kind of echoing other people's moves there. So I think that's where the play on the name came from. But here, her ancestors are echoing to her, and she has some sort of a power set where she can, you know, move things, I guess, get some sort of like force power. And then she can also share it with her family members.
Yeah.
Which was a little, I don't know, but I think the whole thing with having like a street level hero and then having like such a, in theory, strong power set kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. I think I pretty much agree with that by and large. Like the sharing at the end, like it was kind of like just like fun. They didn't overplay it too much, but at the same time, it was like, oh, okay, so you can do that. I mean, they are the same family, but like that was kind of like grandma had her own experience, so there was that. But I did kind of think in that moment, oh, okay, so everybody's got it for a second. Okay, at least they didn't overdo it. But yeah, it's, you could argue maybe she could be OP, but also it's just like, the vagueness of it, the nebulousness of it. It's just like,
yeah,
I don't know what it is. And I mean, I don't know. You could address that in some capacity, but I don't know. It just felt like it could have been done better.
Well, it's like, you know, we saw this with the Marvels that it was a lot of like light force coming out of people's hands and shooting stuff. You know, that's kind of Maria Rambeau, that's Captain Marvel there. You know, you can say that even for Doctor Strange too, right? That they're, so some of that stuff is just kind of falling thin. And when it's just kind of like what feels like force or like a lot of air getting thrown at the opponent. You know, it's not like flesh cutting. It's not like internal wounds that you see. You know what I mean? They just kind of get back up and start fighting again. Like you kind of lose the effect of it.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I think that is fair. I think what my thing with this though is like, really, we have an understanding at least of what like Photon or Monica Rambeau, however you want to put it, Captain Marvel, Kamala Khan, Strange, like we have an understanding of what these people can do. I mean, it's just it's with Echo, it's just like kind of it feels like it's a rough draft version of her powers. And I guess she's just dealing with them for the first time. And also like if she goes to New York, she's probably not going to have this. So that's a whole other thing.
Close to the source. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. So I mean that they, but again, like that's not said, it's only like, oh, you came back and now you're experiencing it. Like, I don't know. It's like, again, it's just not tight. Like the storytelling on it. That's just what it comes down to. Again,
I agree. But you know who was tight though? Best performance by a side character, our guy Scully, the grandfather.
Yeah.
The ex-husband of Chula, the grandmother there.
Yeah.
He's great. He can fix anything.
Yeah.
He's trying to pull fast ones on the suburban white people, the white couple that come in.
That was funny.
He's like, buy this now or whatever he's humming there.
That was the chant. It was buy this now. It was great. He was awesome. Yeah. And he was like hitting on his ex-wife too.
I love the game. Yeah, I love the game.
Awesome. He was definitely like, you had two characters that were here as like some semblance of comedic relief. Mm-hmm. And he thrived very much so in that role.
Would you call Fisk a side character?
No, he's too. I mean, he's not. I wouldn't call him a side character.
Yeah. Okay. No. I think the other one that you could nominate, you alluded to him, was Biscuits, but I wasn't high on Biscuits.
Biscuits was fine. I mean, I felt like I thought they were going to do a lot more of them. And then it was like if you go too far with this guy, I might be out on Biscuits. So it's like they stopped right when they needed to.
Yeah, when you talk about the MCU formula, he is his role is the formula there. It's kind of like the dopey sidekick family member who can't get anything right, but it's just there for comedic performance. You know, it's the Happy Hogan type.
Yeah, Michael Pena type.
Yeah.
They desperately want. I don't know if they can get Michael Pena back or not. I don't know what else he's doing, but like they're probably trying. Like they probably want to try and get more of that in the in the MCU. Yeah.
So when you talk about Biscuits, that role there, there's always going to be that role in the MCU movie, right?
Yeah. So he's in Who Lost the Series for you?
I think so. I thought, because again, that just felt like it was a thinly veiled move. Like, all right, we need to have this guy here. We'll make him the dopey sidekick, right? Mm-hmm. But the other one was Black Crow, because he's hiring the bad guy, Vicky. Anyone who has neck tattoos is a bad dude.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was in the same gang. He's just...
Yeah.
He did lose, though. I mean, like, you got... Like, he said it. Like,
trusted him.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you trusted this guy, and he ended up pulling a faster on you. The one for me who lost this series was Zane. Not because of anything. It is maybe more the actor who played Zane.
He looks scary. He looks like the real deal.
Andrew Howard, who I've seen in other shit. I looked at his filmography. I don't know if he played Zaz somewhere. Victor Zaz was a Batman villain.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did, but like I've seen him in stuff before. Like he does a good job, but this just, I don't know. It felt off. Maybe it's just like the writing was just sloppy around the character, and he was like restricted in a way, but it wasn't very clear. He felt like he was supposed to be a loose cannon, but he also wasn't. And we've seen that kind of stuff before where someone's like, you know, they're ready to go, but like when the boss says like heal, they heal. But it's just, something was off with him as well too for me.
Yeah,
his dialogue may have been bad. Actually, he may have had the bad dialogue the worst of anybody.
It didn't, and he's the tracksuit mafia, right? That's what they are.
I don't think he was part of that. No, I mean, like part of the larger Fisk, you know, outfit, but not that.
Gotcha. Because again, because if that was, I was kind of operating under the assumption that this was still the Tracksuit Mafia. Maybe they weren't wearing it there, but you know, from Hawkeye, they were so jovial and kind of dumb and like Three Stooges like, and these were a little bit more ruthless.
Yeah. Yeah, this shit's dark. Like, this was definitely a dark series, and I did appreciate the atmosphere that we had throughout all this, for sure.
Absolutely. There, who do you think won the series?
Speaking of dark and atmosphere, I think fans of Marvel Netflix, because while this series is not like a rip-roaring success, I do think that there are the atmosphere that we had in this is a welcome return. You see Charlie Cox, and he comes in, and it's only for a short bit, but he did an awesome job. And again, like, seeing Kingpin have a prominent role in this story and Vincent D'Onofrio doing his thing, like, did a great job. And then we see the plan for him at the very end of this series. And I think that should have been in what aged the best too. Like we said,
yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I think what's going to age the best too is Kingpin's standing in the MCU. We already know he's going to be like the Thanos for street level, and it's very appropriate. And the storyline that we're supposed to be getting with him, it was an outstanding comic book run. That's actually not that old.
Is that Devil's Reign?
Devil's Reign. Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was by Chip Zdarsky, who's,
Your guy.
I think we had him on ahead of Devil's Reign or just after Devil's Reign. I can't remember, but yeah, we had him on TLDR. It does an awesome job. So I really hope he's part of like that project. I don't know if he will be, but he absolutely should, because he knows that character so well, both of them.
Okay, I like that. So you spotlighted the Marvel Netflix series. I'm going to spotlight the Hawkeye series for who won the series.
Hmm.
I thought that was a nice little reminder. We got 15 minutes of the Hawkeye show making it into episode one there. And it's like, oh, I did like that show. That was a good time. There was, there was some fun stuff there. Then Daredevil, I think we're all just excited for it. It'll be interesting, as we were talking about to start this exit survey, but what Marvel... you know, what Marvel's thoughts were by doing this in a one dump release. I think we will see what they think of this character and, you know, maybe the legs that this character has by how much or how little Echo appears in Daredevil. It's an 18 episode series, seemingly plenty of room for some sort of a crossover there. So I think, you know, how much or how little you see of her in Daredevil will probably dictate what, you know, how much she's used in the future, or if this is just a one-off.
Yeah. So for me, like, just to put a cap on my whole thoughts on this show, I did like the backdrop of Oklahoma, like being out west. I thought that was a cool change of pace, because we see so much shit happen in New York or just cities in general. So to get out there, I really like that, especially with this character too, where it's like plays into her heritage and then her power set too, in some capacity. I do think that she has potential going forward. I don't know if she's like, if we should get a Echo season two, but I do think for this whole Devil's Reign stuff coming up, I would like to see her be a player in some capacity, but even if it's just an ancillary role, which is probably where she's best suited.
Yeah. We don't really know if she's good or bad, you know, to her family, she's good, but in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, she still wants to be. She still wanted to run shit. Like she was tempted by Kingpin's offer.
And she's got a lot of bodies.
Yep, she absolutely does. Very true. Mm-hmm.
And she's seen a lot of shit too. Kind of like what Fisk was saying at the end. You know, she's like, you witnessed all these murders. Like, you know, she probably knew that those interpreters were getting killed, even if she didn't hear the gunshots. You know,
bro, that was brutal. When that, yeah. At least yeah. I don't know if that was the same one the whole time, but holy shit, that was brutal.
Yeah, the sign language interpreters probably lost the series too. That should be mentioned.
That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay, so I think that puts a bow on it here. So Nick gave it a 78. I gave it a 77. That's good for a 77.5. Good for 40th in our MCU rankings. Out of 45 pieces of content here. Crazy. Mm. So that's it there, but we still have time to get your tickets for the Discharge Depot. All aboard!
Choo-choo, bitches.
All right, what'd you do this weekend?
So, been watching a lot of different stuff. Had a little bit of an extended weekend. And I got to watch... I never watched Dredd, either Stallone's or Carl Urban's version. Mm-hmm. And then I saw people from the DSG tweeting about it a while back and just never got a chance to watch until this weekend. And I would love to see them see more of this character. And Carl Urban did do a really good job. Like, for that movie is, I feel like it came out in the aughts, but like that's a solid movie. I don't know what it is on Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb, but yeah, Dread is on, and that's on Netflix. So yeah. Anybody can go and pop that on.
Yep. All right.
Some fun action stuff. Dread is an outrageous character. And then also Maestro. That is, I believe, also Netflix. That's the Bradley Cooper.
Where he's got the big nose.
Yep. Yep. That was a very emotional, very heavy movie. You definitely need to be ready to sit down and take everything in if you're going to watch it. I do think it's an interesting thing for anybody to experience once. I don't think it has a lot of rewatchability just because of how heavy it is, but it was good. It was very well done, and I'm glad I watched it. Him and
I don't want to ruin this. I heard that this is kind of like he gets inspiration from a gay lover or something like that. Is that
I don't know if it's specifically put that way, but yeah, there's a lot going on with his sexuality in this.
Yeah.
That's part. I mean, this is based on Leonard Bernstein, which I never, I never knew who Leonard Bernstein was, but then at the end of the movie, this is not a spoiler in the terms of the plot, but just a little thing that happens. It's, I think, Tom Sawyer. I think it's a Rush song, and they go Leonard Bernstein. And
End
of the world. End of the world. That's
what that's right. Yeah.
And I was holy shit, that's okay.
Now you got the connection going. All right, yeah. Very nice.
But yeah, so it was a look into him and his life, and it's very complex, for sure. So yeah, it's a very emotional movie. What about you?
Did you watch You Are What You Eat?
Not yet. No. I apologize.
I watched School of Rock last night on Netflix. I haven't watched that movie, God, in forever. 2003, Jack Black. My wife hadn't seen it. I was like, you will love this movie. She absolutely loved it. It was great. It's a tour de force by Jack Black. I mean, he is just all over that movie, chewing up scenery left and right with his normal Jack Black shenanigans. Very good movie.
I love that movie.
Pretty well.
That was I saw that on my, what it was, 2003, so that would have been my 12th birthday. I saw that movie.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's a good little birthday gift there. Good little birthday party. We went back and we're listening to Tenacious D after too, so he has some good cuts there.
Yeah, an album and a movie, or just a movie?
Oh, so that's Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny was an album movie. But him and that guy, they actually put out a whole album early 2000s, 2001, called Tenacious. It was just Tenacious D.
Huh.
Tribute's a good song. The other one it's really funny, it's called Fuck Her Gently. That's a very nice song. But there's some good ones. I think Wonder Boy is another one.
Okay.
So he's got some good stuff there. I would recommend it. He's very talented.
Oh yeah. There's no question about
all that. The kids are too in that movie. I think I saw that all the band members actually play the instruments. They're actually musical prodigies.
Interesting.
Yeah, good stuff.
Makes sense, but I didn't know that. Cool. Yeah, good stuff.
So next week here, Rebel Moon.
So we found out, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw this on internet that on the internet that Snyder is saying the rated R cut of, I don't know if it was the first Rebel Moon or both the part one and part two, because we're getting that in April. That's all coming out in the summer, the rated R version. I don't I'm down to do that if you so want to do it, so want to watch it. The PG-13 version, I guess. You cool with it still?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we'll do that. That works. I got nothing else that would work in the moment. Maybe if we're truly inspired by something during the week, we can shift gears. But I think that's something good to plan on meantime.
Would you the other idea I had, you just brought it up and when you asked if I've watched it yet, is do you wanna do You Are What You Eat? Or would you rather do Rebel Moon?
We should probably do Rebel Moon, but if you talk about, if you do see You Are What You Eat, I'd be happy to talk about it with you.
Okay. Yeah. No, I do intend to watch it. Missus is going to enjoy that as well. But okay. Cool. All right.
Just do so on a full stomach. When okay, you do watch it
on a full stomach. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because it's like a lot about like factory farming and kind of like where right. food comes from and stuff like that. So it can be off-putting.
Sure. Okay. Right.
But, but hopefully Rebel Moon won't be off-putting. We'll give that a go. PG-13 or bust.
We'll find out.
Yeah. But till then, we'll be same bat time, same bat place as always.